Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Brett Williams, and this is Classical Guitar Insider. The show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. SavageClassical.com. Richard Sage will hook you up with the guitar of your dreams. Go out there to Bayshore, New York, or take a look at them online at Savage, S-A-V-A-G-E, Classical.com. The show is also sponsored by the El Nora Guitar Festival at the University of Illinois Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. I was able to interview Chris Eldridge and Julian Lage there, and they're on the show today. Julian Lage is a New York jazz guitarist. Chris did live in New York, but relocated to Nashville. And these are two guitarists that, when you see them, they just they make you wonder why you studied classical. They are not classical guitarists, but their level of communication on stage, their virtuosity, their sensitivity, it's all there. It's everything you ever dreamed of doing as a fine artist. And these guys in Nashville are just playing circles around us. We have to stop them. We have to go to war with Nashville. The show is also sponsored by audibletrial.com/insider. That's audibletrial.com/insider for a 30-day free download, a 30-day trial and a free download of your choice. You can do both. All of it happens at audibletrial.com/insider. So Chris is part of Punch Brothers. And Punch Brothers, I listened to a little bit before, but after I interviewed Chris, I spent a little more time just because I loved... Sorry, I had to move the microphone away. I know I was running a little hot there. I hope it wasn't too much. But I spent some time listening to some Punch Brothers albums after I interviewed Chris. And I was having a great day. I was having a good time. I was like, I love this stuff. It's called Chamber Bluegrass. That's what it's... I guess that's what, you know, the label we're putting on it. But the head of Punch Brothers is this mandolinist named Chris Teeley. And Chris Teeley is also the host of Prairie Home Companion. Now, I didn't know Garrison Keillor left. I don't think I've listened to that show in 10 years. But I listened all the time before. And this guy is... Chris Teeley is... Chris Eldridge is also good looking and funny. But Chris Teeley is really good looking, really funny. And you are too, Chris. But Chris Teeley is like, you know, he's got the whole giant star power thing going. The big hair and all the stuff. You know, dresses all steampunky, the whole thing. So he's funny. He's good looking. He's Nashville. He's New York. He moved the Prairie Home Companion from, I think it was in St. Paul, Minnesota, to here. You know, so he's a country boy with a... New York is in his heart, though. It's his home. And once I found out all this throughout the day of listening to the Punch Brothers albums, I thought the thing that I thought was, I hope Caroline never meets this guy. It's my nightmare. Sure enough, that day she goes, guess who I served coffee to today? Chris Teeley. Just that day, you know, because that's the way the world works. And I very selfishly said, I hope you didn't exchange information with him. Now, she's a great musician herself. And I, you know, this, they share the same aesthetic. They would have beautiful children. She would have all the money she needs. She would be around music all the time instead of just around a bitter old fart like me. Everything she ever dreamed of. And I was like, I hope you don't exchange information with him. Not yet. I need her in my life. I don't think it's... We're not breaking up. At least not anytime soon. So you guys, Chris, Julian, and Chris Teeley, just back off my girl. I'm not saying that Chris Teeley hit on my girl at all. He did not. He's married. She said he was a very nice guy. I'm sure he's a nice person. I don't know him. And he spoke to my girlfriend. So he is automatically an enemy of the state. The show is sponsored by CasperTrial.com/insider. That's CasperTrial.com/insider. You can go there. You can sleep for 20 years for all I care. Just make sure that you buy your mattress from CasperTrial.com/insider before you go off to that long, deep sleep that you've been looking forward to. CasperTrial.com/insider. I got a great call from a guy named Johnny Santiago, Juan Santiago, out there in Bakersfield, California. He's trying to start a classical guitar society. And he asked me for some information. I couldn't talk to him over the phone because I was at work, but I emailed him back. I always try and email people back. I try to take a couple of days, think about what they're asking. If they're asked, sometimes they just want to talk about nothing. But generally, you know, if you actually have a real question or something to talk about, I'll get you back. I'll probably email you back more than you want to be emailed because I'm lonely. The thing is that he asked me about how to make what'd you ask there, buddy? You asked, you want to talk about guitar society in general, how to keep them interesting and engaging. I don't really know anything about them, and I've been going about it all by myself mostly. Your interview with John Olson was very helpful, and I'd like to get your insight. So he's talking about Bakersfield, California. Bakersfield is in the center of the state. You know, it's kind of like a Fresno. Then you go south, I think, and it's Bakersfield. Am I right? I'm from the northern center of the state, Stockton, Sacramento. So I kind of get it. I know the temperature. I know the pollen is terrible. I know what's going on. The flatness of it all. But I think what I told him was pretty, I don't know. I thought that I'd share it with you because, you know, I often on this show, it's easy for me to just sort of go, you know, I complain about things, but I don't really talk about how to fix them. And I really like emails like this because it challenges me to actually, you know, come up with an idea. And it made me think about the way that guitar societies have grown over the years. You know, when I was in Austin, there was a thing called Guitar Love. And from that, I believe, came the Austin Guitar Society. I may be wrong, but I think the two were intertwined. And Guitar Love was just simply a bunch of us getting together. We just played for each other. Matt Hensley was there, who, you know, he's like the big head honcho out there now. And now they have a big budget, and you know, it's one of the biggest guitar societies in the world. But these things all start out with a bunch of people just sort of having a place to play for each other. And then you start charging people money for that. You start saying, look, you know, I need to get money so that we can pay for the room, so we have a nice place to play, this and that. And then, you know, once the budget goes up, you start charging people, you know, $20 a year or something. And then you're able to really present people and charge tickets and that's what you do. So you start out with not a big idea. A guitar society doesn't even have to have concerts. It could just be a society of guitarists that are promoting, that are looking for opportunities, maybe doing some grant writing if you got somebody on your staff that can do that. You know, the first couple of people are probably going to be your administration eventually. And so, you know, you start out with that, something that you don't have to pay for. You just get the people together. And once you have the people, you start getting the money together. Now, the next thing that happens is, and I'm not saying this is true because I've never started a guitar society. But the thing that he was really asking about was what do I present, right? What keeping engaging and interesting. And I think he's probably heard me complain about how, you know, sometimes these things aren't the most interesting rousters ever. Now, luckily, we've got a great guy at the helm in New York, John Olson, and we have a New York budget. We're the New York Yankees. We've got the money. You don't in Bakersfield. You're going to have to be more creative. But John has got, you know, he's got two different series, really, that he's presenting. He's got the Salon series, and he's got the International Artist series. The International Artist is big budget people that are coming from all over the world. The Salon series is people that are from other places, but the budget is much smaller. And I think depending on the location of the people, they're not getting that much money. But the thing is that the model for the current classical guitar society is that you have a budget, and almost all that budget, I'm assuming, goes to paying big people to come through, and then you give a couple $100 to some local people or some people that you know, and that's fine. But the only thing that I see that I think is missing from most guitar societies is a good network of people to listen to and really intelligently think about the submissions. I think that Johnny is his name too. He goes by Juan and Johnny, that he would be doing the world a big favor by listening carefully to all the submissions. And I think that this is something that, you know, we need to do. As guitar societies are becoming important, it used to be where you had to go to a college or a school to go see a concert. And now you have these new institutions that are becoming very powerful. And they should be powerful. But they basically are, you know, they have the money. The fans are giving the money to these guitar societies. And the guitar societies are deciding who they're going to present to the fans. So that's a big responsibility. And I think that if we need to take more of the budget and devote it to people actually listening to the submissions and then marketing the people that you believe in, not just presenting people that your audience may have heard of, but also, you know, taking, you know, a budget for making sure that your audience knows that they're in for a treat or that they're in for something new, something that, you know, will engage them. And that takes a budget, and that takes people writing copy, and that takes people making art, and that takes extra work and it takes extra money. But I think as the money gets bigger, we need to start doing that as guitar societies. And that's something that I think is lacking, because it can't just be limited to presenting Jason Vio, David, you know, David Starobin or Leisner or something, and then whatever, you know, kids will do it for, you know, a fistful of peanuts and a pat on the head. You know, like, there's got to be a way to kind of get the people that are in between in. And I hope I don't sound bitter. I don't mean to. I'm just saying this is an idea for how Johnny and those of you that are starting these guitar societies, I hope these start up all over the country. And I hope you'll take this, you know, with a grain of salt, because I am a bitter little, don't worry about me, but just maybe, you know, the thing is that we need to reward these artists that are submitting their hard work for doing what we told them to do. All right. So the least we can do is listen to it or find help listening to it, because I know there's a lot of submissions. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Here is Chris and Julian at the Elnora Guitar Festival at the Credit Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Illinois.
Let's talk about that. You got your start. It was in California. You're a Californian boy?
California, exactly. I started, you know, with regard to your question, it was kind of an abbreviated path. Yeah. That I took down the classical guitar road. Yeah. You know, I went started as a blues guitar player.
As a kid.
Yeah, that right. was to play with my father, because that's what, you know, that we just both loved that music. And then when I was about 7, I went to the prep program at the San Francisco Conservatory.
Right.
And that's where I studied with Scott Camille, who was my teacher there, and did classical guitar. But I didn't last long. I mean, I was there maybe...
Oh, you didn't graduate?
I mean, it was a prep program, so I was 7. I went for like a year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
What am I thinking of?
Yeah. I
was too busy taking off my shirt to listen. Because it's hot.
Because it's hot.
Yeah. We're all shirtless. Yeah. It's really fun. Go ahead.
I went for about a year, and then I expressed interest in jazz, you know?
Yeah.
And at the time, they couldn't really accommodate it. They were like, sorry, that's not what we do, and it's either us or, you know, classical or jazz. And
yeah, said, Sergio, well, wasn't there or anything like that?
No, it was before. Okay. I don't think he was. I certainly wasn't privy to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, okay, I went away from that, and then about a year later, when I was 8 and through when I was 9, is when I went to Sonoma State. Again, it's kind of I wasn't there to graduate. There was a kid who was in these courses, you know.
Right.
And that was my progression, was deeper and deeper into the world of improvised music and jazz, always with an eye on the classical world for just out of appreciation.
Okay.
Ironically, full, you know, 20 years later, so the conservatory in San Francisco has a jazz program, started last month, and I'm the teacher, guitar teacher. So it with the blessing of Tannenbaum and that whole crew, they... You know, there's a lot of mutual respect. So I'm glad that it's changing now.
Well, they had Dusan Bogdanovich there for a while. Like, they have
people
composers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Guitar composers, but...
But from the roots in acoustic music, jazz world, I think it's they're doing cool stuff.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Professor.
Yeah, right. Hardly. Just stay out of the way.
And then is... Chris, has it... You guys playing together, it seems like you guys are your own genre. If I may, I mean, obviously we have what they call bluegrass chamber music, which is what you are with the Punch Brothers. Not what you are, but it is, you know, it's the way that you
people talk about it that way. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, but what about your background, your earlier background?
Well, my
where are you from?
I'm from Fredericksburg, Virginia, which is kind of a bedroom community to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So it's sort of that zone. And my parents are both musicians. They're both banjo players. So my father was a banjo player in a band, bluegrass band called The Seldom Scene. And they were, you know, a great band and professional band. And so I grew up going to concerts and just being around a lot of great music being played by great musicians.
Virtuosic banjo playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everything else. Like there were just a lot of great people around. And so, of course, I wanted nothing to do with that. But I did. I loved music. I always loved music from, some of my very earliest memories.
Was it like your earliest memories liking music? Was it bluegrass?
No.
Because most of the bluegrass people I know are actually, you know, fans of everything.
Yeah, musicians like music. But no, I mean, my mom was a really avid listener of all kinds of things. So, I mean, some of my very earliest memories are Glenn Gould playing those like 2 and 3 part inventions.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a big thing. And Oscar Peterson. There's a lot of piano music.
Those are my two favorites.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
And, all kinds of stuff. But those in particular, and this record by the David Grisman Quintet, which was sort of a
which one?
A string band.
Dogwood?
No, the Hot Dog.
Oh, like an old one?
Yeah. Super old.
Oh,
like
Hot Dog.
When Tony Rice was in the band.
Yeah, dude.
And that there's some stuff on that like I just remember giving me weird chills that I didn't quite understand.
That
when
was
I was
Tony Rice
probably 5 years
those
old.
Chills,
yeah, it was all of them. Yeah, and so like that was I had all this other music that I liked, and when I started getting a little bit older. I had a friend who played guitar and was just kind of a natural prodigy. And he was 2.5 years older than me. His dad was also in The Seldom Scene. His name is Jay Starling. His dad was John Starling. And Jay was really great, and I wanted to be like Jay. And Jay started playing the guitar, so I wanted to start playing the guitar. And that was when I was about 9 years old. And I had no interest in acoustic music or anything. It was just electric guitar. And
both of you. You too, Julian.
I wouldn't say I had no interest in acoustic
music.
You
said blues, though.
There's a lot of great acoustic blues music.
Yeah, did you guys see? I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. He's like my favorite guy I've seen.
Is that right? Here at the festival?
Gervais Willis is his last name.
I don't know.
He's like 18 years old. You guys got to see this guy.
Amazing.
Just
okay.
A blues, straight ahead blues kid.
So cool.
Dude, I can't believe it.
Wow.
It blew my mind.
Wow.
I mean, I haven't liked blues this much in a long time.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Jontavious Willis, I think is his name.
Is
I'm having him on tomorrow.
Jontavious Willis.
Yeah, he's playing tonight. I mean, it's just like, I don't know what to
How
say.
Cool.
It
I love
breaks
that.
My heart. Yeah, I love it too, because you're thinking like, okay, well. But he's just funny, and he's a great actor.
Wow.
He moves well. Mm-hmm. It's just really a beautiful thing to watch. I don't know why I'm telling you guys about this. I just think...
Because it's
great. I want to hear him now.
You don't know who you're going to...
Yeah.
You know, you don't know who to see. And
that's
just
right.
Different things going on at the same time. But... yeah, so we all start out as blues guys. I think that's our thing because it's so cool, and we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So as far as the banjo, did you see Grateful Dead's new documentary?
I did.
Have you heard about it?
I'm aware that it exists.
Did you know that he was a banjo player?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, he was a good player.
He was
Jerry Garcia,
player.
And he's a great musician, you know, all around. But
did you ever do banjo?
I can play, not really. I mean, I can play like 5 things that my dad played, and I sound like a clone. But that accounts for about 2.5 minutes of music. I can sound really good for about 2.5 minutes, and then that's it.
Right. I think that's what you have to do when you pick that thing up. It's just, and the competition is striking.
There are some amazing,
speed.
Amazing players.
As far as and so you were in Nashville at some point, or
I live in Nashville now.
You guys are both Nashville now.
No, just me.
Just him. I live in New York, never lived in Nashville.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like Nashville. I was in Nashville the other day.
Is that right?
Yeah. But as far as your new, what are you doing in New York exactly?
You know.
I mean, you're a jazz guy.
I'm a jazz guy, and I'm working, and I'm, New York's a hub, so I leave town a lot. I work mostly outside of New York, but I live there.
Where do you live?
We live on, my lady and I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. And the community is great. There's a lot of wonderful music. And I look forward to the times when I'm there. This next week, I'm there for a residency at a club called The Stone. And that's something that's a very New York phenomenon.
Yeah.
And but otherwise, it's been a lot of travel these days. And I love it. But it's a, you know.
Do you have kids or nothing like that? Oh, there you go. None of that yet. If but yeah, so the Upper West Side. And how long have you lived in New York then?
We've been there about 7 years. And previous to that, I was at Berklee College of Music. So I was in Boston for 4.5.
Now, as far as Berklee, like, you know, like we talked about. So I'm trying to get my head straight because I came into this with this magical idea about you getting far in the classical guitar universe and then dropping out and saying, I need to create.
Yeah.
And then doing it. But that's not what happened. The classical guitar was something that was an early life sort of situation.
Very early.
Moving right into jazz
at
some point.
That was it. I mean, like I said before, my affinity for the classical guitar and the lineage and the musical literature that comes from that world is very profound. Like, it means a lot to me, just as a fan, you know?
Yeah.
And then as a student of it, I don't have any desire to play classical guitar. I have too much respect in a way for it, but it does inform a lot of what constitutes my awareness of the guitar community. It's like very important. It's like the way we look to blues guitar players, we look to classical guitar players. And, you know, there's a symbiosis with a lot of musicians who feel like jazz is that to them, where they think, God, I'd love to study jazz someday. I'm kind of like that with those other disciplines.
Well, you have a beautiful thing where you actually are one of the few improvising guitar players who deals with counterpoint on the guitar.
Thanks. Yeah, that's probably totally comes from me stealing any notion of it that I can get from classical guitar music. I appreciate that.
And when you hear that, like, what are you listening to exactly? Like, what's your?
There's specific things. There's everyone dealt with it differently. There's obviously the lute suites and that language, but there's a lot of Takemitsu stuff, the stuff for guitar that I've always kind of looked to as a model. Elliot Carter's piece always had this certain. It was charged with a certain kind of wit, as far as counterpoint goes. It wasn't just functional. It wasn't just for resolution. That I always thought. It was almost at an instability that I related a lot to coming from the jazz world.
Right. The dissonance that pushes us into the consonants. That's sort of the idea.
I guess so, yeah. And the dissonance doesn't have to be a tonal phenomenon, but a rhythmic dissonance too, where it's not like for like. It can be unusual combination of things. I'm trying to think of other pieces that I can point to right now. Obviously, all the Villa-Lobos stuff, which is so elegant, and all the Brouwer stuff too. But yeah, I kind of feel like, I'm approximating a lot of things that I hear in that world. And but God, it's amazing. I mean, practicing Bach lute suites, as terrible as I sound playing them, has been a big anchor in my practice regimen for years. I mean, and it's all hybrid. It's all pick and fingers.
Yeah.
So a lot of things. It's nothing I would ever perform, really, for someone, but it's been...
You're clearly informed by it.
Yeah, it's...
You're not a straight-ahead jazz guy.
I guess not.
No, yeah. I don't know.
You know, I don't... That's a funny one. I can't think...
Yeah, I can't really think about what people...
What is a straight-ahead jazz guy? Yeah. In 2017, it's just kind of good guitar playing.
We were just talking about that. I was talking to Jose, who's a regional guy here.
Mm-hmm.
First interview today, and we were talking about how, you know, he's still studying it, but he's at this point where he's still kind of confused a little bit, or like we all are, about we live in this world where we have all these different resources to listen to.
That's right.
And that has obviously positive effects, but at the same time it leads us down a very confusing career path.
Right. Where you like it,
And you want to do it. Like all this electronic music I'm listening to in Brooklyn, and I'm just like, I want to do that, but I can't do that. But you can. I guess I can.
But it is funny how you can feel. I empathize with that. Yeah. Of course. I know some people feel it more who feel like they actually could. I know people like our buddy Armand Hirsch. This is a brilliant guitarist in New York, but he's also a brilliant drummer and producer. And he's the kind of guy who can, if he gets into EDM or if he gets into any
It usually shows up.
He can do it. He can just do it. He just learns it and drops everything and does it for a little while. And he's just kind of wired differently than I am.
Yeah.
But it's I wanted to say one other thing too, that one of my great guitar teachers over the last few years is a guy named Gerald Harsher, who's definitely planted in the classical guitar world. Coming out of the Aaron Shearer lineage and was his student for a while, but anyway, he's now officially in the world of body mapping, which is kind of has a relationship to the Alexander technique, which is another thing that I've studied a lot of.
What, does he have dystonia or something?
He had it for a minute, and I thought I did too.
I do.
You do have it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I basically had all the signs of it about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and I knew him.
In your right hand or left?
Left.
I'm sorry about this, Chris.
No.
Oh, Chris,
not as sorry as I am about the dystonia.
Yeah. Chris, welcome. Just sit there and listen to us talk about dystonia.
This
for like,
is great.
Yeah, this is the best. Yeah.
This probably relates to anyone. You have a classical guitar podcast. There's some people in there who are struggling.
That's why the podcast started.
Is that right?
100%. I got dystonia and I was like, what am I going to do? And I was like, I guess I'll... And this, if there was no other classical guitar podcast.
Isn't that something? Well...
Hooray for dystonia.
Hooray for advocacy and talking about it, because
sure.
As everyone knows, with any injury, someone looks at you and you look normal, but on the inside, you're freaking out.
A lot
of
guests don't want to talk about it. I don't ask them about it, but they I asked you guys, is there anything we shouldn't talk about?
That's
the way I start out every episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people are like, right? I've got a problem with my hand, if you wouldn't, and then we talk about it afterwards and we help each other. And
isn't that, oh, I respect that too, because
mm-hmm.
it's personal.
Yeah.
But Gerald Harsher, he was in Boston forever. Then I think he just moved to Baltimore with his lady. Anyway, he kind of saved my life, and he's, as a teacher and a guitarist, he's brilliant, and he has a way of unpacking dystonia and things that will be dystonia if nothing has changed. He has a way of doing it that made sense to me, and he completely revamped my entire technique, both for both hands. And again, I'm a plectrum player, so it's not classical per se, but I've been the beneficiary of his knowledge, and
I have to talk to him.
Yeah, you kind of do, because it's something very special, and the results are amazing.
Oh my God.
And he has a lot of people internationally who works with him, but he's just kind of like, I don't know, he's... You just need to know about him. Gerald Harsher.
Well, I will. I will definitely talk to him, because a lot of these situations where you have hand problems are anecdotes that are taken from other people's experience.
That's right. They're right.
A lot of the people with first-hand experience are still struggling.
Of course.
Right.
Of course. It's a clumsy thing, and it's awkward, and it doesn't... It's not... You don't want to pity yourself, but you do have to realize that... You know, for me growing up, I played so much guitar, and I did it in such a way that was not challenged in a way. It was just like, no, you want a sound, you squeeze.
You do what you got to do to get it done.
And God willing, you get to a place where you can zoom out and reconsider how you're doing the things that you're doing.
Through body mapping.
Or Alexander technique, or Feldenkrais, or any discipline that suits you.
Yeah.
And so I'm grateful to the classical guitar community, because it's pointed me more towards help than... maybe things in the jazz community, because that's spread out across a lot of instruments and this, you know.
Well, there's a lot of us that get it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think it's just all practice.
It's
too much practice.
It is.
It is
a practice.
You can see it in the performances. You can see it in the presentations, and it's something that needs to be addressed. You know,
it does.
It's constant. You know.
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, I get it. Going over to our other friend over here, bluegrass dude, but I don't want to say bluegrass dude. You're unbelievable. What about your experience? You must have had some experience. No classical guitar at all?
No classical guitar at all. I kind of really regret that. I went to Oberlin and
what?
Studied.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what'd you study at Oberlin? Yeah, I was like.
Well, I was a performance major, but I was kind of this weird guy. So I studied with Bobby Ferraza, who is the jazz guitar teacher. He's now the head of the jazz studies department there.
Right.
Awesome man and teacher and musician and everything. But... yeah, Bobby kind of recognized that I was pretty serious, but kind of on my own, like, four-year vision quest on my own music path. And so he was really supportive in me kind of exploring the acoustic guitar and all the, you know, tributaries that kind of led into what I was really working on. But I never did, like, a hardcore jazz thing there. I always listened to a lot of jazz, and the reason I wanted to be at Oberlin is because, well, initially I was going to go there and study math, but I wanted to be around all these like brilliant musician kids, and I quickly just moved over to the music thing because it was clear that that's what I was really into. But I never got with Stephen Ahrens, the classical guitar teacher there. And Punch Brothers, we've actually been going back and teaching at Oberlin. I'm actually going there in like a week.
Like doing residency?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
With and, Chris and stuff and everybody?
Yeah, the whole band.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I met Stephen Ahren like going back in this new context and never even met him when I was a student. So I just skipped out on that whole thing.
Kind of the way everybody would like to go into every context.
Oh man. But if I had it to do all over, I mean, part of me kind of thinks like, God, I should have really studied classical. That would have been,
no.
It would have been a lot of,
No, you shouldn't have. I think you did the right thing.
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's never too late.
You mean, do you want to teach middle school for the rest of your life? Or do you kind of like the way things are?
Yeah, things are pretty good.
Yeah, I would say they are. And you guys sound beautiful. There certainly is a classical sweep to everything that you guys do in this album.
Thanks.
Thank you.
There's such there's use of dynamics.
Yeah.
There is phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are really, really dancing with each other in a way that pop duos don't always do unless they're married to each other. You guys have found a way to do it.
Right.
And I was in a classical guitar duo one time, and it's sort of difficult to, because it's the balance. And I mean, in this world, in this society, we don't usually want to talk this way, but you do want to balance your masculine self with the sort of, how do you balance the fact that you're communicating in this intimate way with somebody that you're not necessarily, you know, romantically involved with? I know that can be done.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how do you guys address it and make it work from a performance perspective?
I feel like there's nothing.
There's nothing sexual about it.
Love is a beautiful thing.
Love is a beautiful thing.
Itself. I mean, and I'm actually not even kidding right now. I think love is a beautiful thing, and it can express itself in a lot of different ways. And like, I love Julian. Julian's like one of my best friends.
I saw
in the
you
world.
Guys coming up to the hotel, and you guys were chatting like you guys had not spent the last year talking about everything. You guys,
You know, it's and to get to like share the joy of music together. I mean, that's just, I feel so lucky, and it's
right.
It's like a joy every time we get to play together, which actually isn't all the time. And we both are busy, you know, with a lot of stuff most of the time. But like when we get to do this, it to me feels like this, like a real joy, like a rare treat. And it's like, and I'm delighted. I sit back and think, wow, my friend is a badass. Like, this is incredible.
That's cool.
You know, likewise. And I think like in a way, you know, you just kind of wind up doing this dance around that. And it's to me the most natural thing in the world. It's like, how could it not be that?
You know what?
Way?
And that's really what it is. It's really you're watching somebody play while you play.
That's what it is.
You're enjoying a concert, and at the same time, like,
part of it.
What? I mean, it's so crazy.
It's true. I second everything he said. I mean, it's. I think if anyone's trying to, is contending with it from the perspective you're talking about, like, what do I?
I don't know why I even said it.
No, it's valid because it's obviously
important. You watch people. Well, when people get to that level, I'm not talking about two men on stage together.
Right.
I'm talking about that level of intimacy. It's intense.
I guess.
And it's,
so.
I mean, the Punch Brothers is obviously, you're coming to it from the perspective of a chamber music setting, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's an intimacy to the way that you guys play with each other too.
Mm-hmm.
The moving in and out of the phrases, the way that you play is very classical.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are both kind of coming to it. It seems like you guys are both taking a step away from certain genres, which you have always done with this. But you're definitely taking a step. You guys are almost playing classical guitar with each other.
It's almost, if it weren't.
It feels that way a little bit.
Yeah, it can be looked at through that lens. Mm-hmm. The best thing about.
You're just standing up.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much steel string, chamber music.
Right.
You know, we have no delusions of grandeur. You know, this is a project that we do because we love to, not because it's, this popular entity or not that we feel this pressure.
Right.
Like if we don't play our music, everyone's going to survive. Everyone's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I think we think that way is it actually allows us to have more in common with being like kids who can just scuttle off and like work on some secret project in the backyard.
Totally.
Like it's totally, there's no pressure to do whatever, but we were able to be very passionate about these very nuanced things, everything from the music to the types of guitars to how we interact with the instruments to how we interact with the sound system and our one microphone. So we're researchers, and I think that implicates intimacy in just a very genuine way for us.
And as Chris said, I mean, this is like this, the love in all forms is very important.
It is.
Chris, what do you, as far as like the differences between being in a larger ensemble and a smaller ensemble, like not a smaller ensemble, but just a straight up, as we're saying, a very intimate setted duo playing music with so many emotional nuances and it's charged,
right,
what you guys are doing. Certainly what the Punch Brothers are doing, but what kind of concessions or what kind of differences do you see?
Well, I feel like my job in Punch Brothers, I feel a lot more like a cog in a wheel. And I don't mean that in a way to reduce like what I or anybody else does, but it's just they're five people and we're all, everybody's responsibility for the overall picture is a little bit more reduced and the music is more arranged. It doesn't allow for as much spontaneity in a certain way, even though everybody, in order for that music to be good, everybody has to be, all the five of us have to be completely present at all times. You know, even if I'm just playing power chords, like on a section or something like that. In that band, like you got to be super focused all the time. But playing with Julian, I feel like there's a lot more empathy happening at any given moment. Where,
bingo. And that's kind of the word we should be using.
Yeah, yeah. Where like at any moment, if anything could happen, and I feel like Jules has kind of got my back. There's like, once about, it's like being in a long trust fall. Like the, you know, us playing together, it's like going on a corporate retreat to the woods, you know, with the guy. And like you're doing a bunch of like trust exercises.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And, Because we've really got each other's backs and there's a conversation happening, but you're always just trying to listen and respond and go wherever the path is leading. The path can be a lot windier in this situation. Even if you're playing, again, an arrangement, like I feel like playing in a duo setting allows for, you get weird on the dynamics, like, you know, go exploring that. It's like there's always an empathy, an empathetic, empathic road that's open.
Well, and you know that you're always being listened to by the other person, whereas when you're in a larger ensemble, it's even like playing a board game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, there's board games, because I play a lot of board games, and there's board games that are for two. This is, my listeners are going to hate me for bringing this up. But, you know, like, if you're playing with more people, you can't really strategize the same, because you got to think you're thinking about what's happening in four turns.
Yeah.
And if you're playing with two players, you can really go like, okay, I'm going to do this, like chess.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. He's probably going to do this. Then I'll do this. You can think a couple turns ahead.
Right.
But you can't really anticipate the same way when you have that many people.
That's true.
You really can't play the same way. So it's like I think it's like a strategic element to it too.
Yeah. Or you have to, you know, there's a thing too, especially when you're playing improvised music, like of surrendering. Like you can think and you can try and analyze, or you can just really try and turn your brain off. But it's a lot easier, the odds that the other guy is in that same headspace when there's just two of you is a lot better. If you got even one guy who's not there in a five-person band, like a five-person band can do it.
Five's a lot of people.
But yeah, you got to get everybody, all five people have to kind of be there, or else it won't really work in the same way. So,
yeah, or you loosen it up and you're the Rolling Stones or something.
Yeah.
But that's not, you know.
That's different.
Unfortunately, we haven't been afforded those opportunities. Yeah,
different music.
It is different music. Is there anything else that you guys are doing after this? Do you guys plan on sticking it out and releasing? Is this like what you guys think you're gonna pretty much do for a while? Two of you.
We did a lot of it this year. We put this record Mount Royal out this year, and so the first, you know, third of the year, we were mostly playing together and not doing a lot of other stuff. I mean, that we're kind of coming to the end of that. We got like 10 days in October. We're doing you know, and we're going to Japan. That'll be fun. And, we'll, you know, we've been talking about maybe releasing some more music that's a little kind of down and dirty. But Jules has got a new trio record with his trio.
That's true.
That's coming out next year. And I've got a new Punch Brothers record that we're working on that'll be out next year. So we do this like when we can, but it's not... for me personally, I feel like I've got two bands. I got like Punch Brothers and this, and this is going to go relatively dormant for a little while.
Yeah,
you know, just because we have other things to do. But you know, God willing, we'll get to come back to it.
Yeah, I hope you guys do because it's absolutely really an unreal album.
Thanks,
man. There hasn't been anything like it for a long time.
So Thank you so much.
It's really good.
Thank you.
All right, thanks you guys for coming on. Is there anything else you guys want to say before you go? Anything else you want to push, you guys? Is selling any merch or something we need to know about?
Nothing.
Yeah.
We got nothing for you.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, guys. This is Chris and Julian playing their song Bone Collector off the new album Montreal. I hope you enjoyed it. I love their music. Make sure and check out the new album by them. And make sure you go to brettwilliamsmusic.com to donate to the show. Pretty soon I'm going to start doing a monthly membership. You still will get the show for free, but there'll be probably some membership benefits in there, like some secret episodes or something like that. I don't know. I'm trying to find a way to feed myself. So let's start with that. All right. I'll see you next time. Bye.